Blog Talk Radio. For joining me tonight here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I am your hostess. The music you were listening to there at the beginning of the show is a little bit different than my normal song. It's titled Always, and it's by Jill Mattson, who is our guest this evening. And I just want to extend a welcome to you, whether you're joining me here for the first time or whether you've been listening to my show in the past and you're coming back to the show again. And here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at the different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. And some weeks I'm discussing different aspects of how compassion is in our life and affects our life and the different areas of compassion. And then sometimes I'm doing more exercises and practical implementations. A lot of times I've got guests on the show, which I've got a great lineup of guests going on this year, so I'm very happy to bring that to you. And I highlight different musical artists along the way, just like tonight. I've got Jill Matson on the show tonight, and in the past I've had Stephen Halpern on and Claire Hedin. Coming up this summer, I've got Peter Cater coming on the show, so lots of good musical guests that I'm bringing in for you as well. And I also have occasional nights where I have call-in coaching nights, and that allows you to take advantage of getting some coaching and making some breakthroughs and things that you're dealing with. And in my personal work, what I do is I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I've created a tool for making breakthroughs and manifesting, which is called the Genesis Clearing Statement. If you've missed that, I believe I used that last week on our show, and you can go back and listen to that in the archives. And that's been on a couple of the previous shows that I've done. I've also authored two books, and they're titled Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the Workbook. And I'm soon to be releasing my next set of books coming out, which is based on relationships. So I'm just getting some finishing touches on that, working out with an artist for some cover work on that, and then we'll be moving forward with that. So I'm very excited to be ready to release that to you very soon. And in addition to that, I've created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour that includes workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. So look for that coming up as well. We'll have some events going on, it looks like, this fall. In the meantime, before I actually start the tour, I do have events that are running, and you can always check out those events at jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And there's also an option there for gifting the tour. So if you can't maybe make it to some of the events, but you still want to support the work I'm doing, when you're gifting the money, it does help me get out to the fundraisers and those organizations that I do fundraisers for, which, by the way, 90% of what I bring in on those fundraising events does go to the organization. So it's a huge chunk that goes to them. And just a reminder, if you enjoy the show this evening, make sure that you tell your friends, your family, significant others, Facebook buddies, share it on your social media areas, because this is going to be some great information tonight, and we've got a lot of great shows here with a lot of great information for people. And they'll just use the same link to come in and listen to it in the archives that you listen to it live. So they can do that at their convenience. And also they can go to my Activating Compassion Facebook page, which is facebook.com/activatingcompassion/notes, as well as my website, jessieannnicholsgeorge1, that's the number one, .com. And all of the shows I have are archived there as well. On my webpage, there's a whole section for Main Street Universe on there, so you can actually get to know all the different guests that or hosts that we have on the show, look at their individual pages and see what times their shows are running throughout the week, and that's a great option for just getting to know everybody's work that's right here on Main Street Universe. Now, before we get started, those of you that have listened to the show before, you do know that I like to delve into The 72 Names of God, Technology for the Soul by Yehuda Berg. And I like to use this book just to get a little insight, a little message for the week. And this message then does get posted on my website, on my Main Street Universe page. And I like to just randomly open up because it always seems that it has something applicable to what we're doing for the week. And if you enjoy this message, again, you can always read it on the page. I do get it posted right away for you, so you'll have that to look at during the week. Now, let's see what we've got here tonight from Yehuda. And the message we've got tonight is revealing the dark side. So So this is going to be really interesting, given that we're going to be bringing in some information about ancient cultures tonight. And he starts off with a quote here as part of his message. And the quote's by Kaiser Soze from The Usual Suspects. And it says, "The greatest trick the devil ever played was convincing the world he didn't exist." And then he goes on to say, "Did you ever wonder why seemingly bad things happen to good people?" Now, Yehuda's insights on this, and I think I've heard this question from a lot of people, you know, why is this really good person always having bad things happen to them? Or why does this person have bad things in their life when they're such a good person? So this is a very big thing for a lot of people right now. And the insight that Yehuda provides is, our purpose in life is to find the light that was hidden at the moment of creation. That purpose can be fulfilled only if we identify the actual hiding spot, which is all our negative traits, each and every last one of them. We can come into this world blessed with a nature that's 99.9% positive, but there can still be one microscopic negative trait buried somewhere inside. If we ignore it, life gently knocks us on the head. If we still ignore it and wonder, why me, the knock becomes harder. So what are good people like us supposed to do? When sunlight shines through a set of window blinds, thousands of dust particles are visible in the shafts of light. But until the sunlight arrived, we couldn't detect the dirt and dust swirling in the air. The light of this name works in the same way. When we allow the spiritual light to shine in our lives, it reveals any self-centered qualities that still taint our nature. Activate this name when you find yourself asking, what did I do? And the meditation that Yehuda provides with this is, light shines. You recognize the negative forces still active within yourself. Your reactive impulses are no longer a mystery. With the power of this name, their history. And the way the name is pronounced for revealing the dark side is Yud Chet Vav. Okay, that's Yud Chet Vav. And this is really a great thing to keep in mind. And it's very important for us to realize that sometimes, even though it's very uncomfortable to see that negative side or to acknowledge that these negative traits are still there, even when we've been working so hard on ourselves, that it's a good thing when they're brought to light, because when the universe is willing to shine that light, when we allow that light to shine on them, that's when we can get rid of that dark energy. That's when we can overcome things. So my message to you is, don't be afraid to let that light shine on them. Don't be afraid to look at what is uncomfortable there. Now, a little message here about our topic tonight. Many people are used to the phrase, let the past be in the past. And while this may apply to most things in our life, what about history, culture, and ancient civilizations? After all, much of what we build our future on has been from what we learned from our past. However, if we can take this even deeper, what value can we gain by resurrecting ancient cultures and civilizations outside of the historical aspects? Part of the path to learning about ourselves, how we function, our preferences, is about delving into our heritage. We're used to looking at things like a family tree, maybe knowing that, you know, what country our ancestors came from. But what about our spiritual heritage? What about those past lives and what our soul is coded to? And we see about this a lot of times where people are drawn to certain cultures or civilizations. And it seems that we, on a soul level, draw to these various cultures and time periods for a good reason. As geologists unearth more and more these days, they are learning connections to not only ancient civilizations, but also interplanetary groupings. But my question comes in, what are we truly unearthing? Is it just artifacts or the energy of civilization? Is there value in bringing out the energy of these former times and cultures, and is it important that we remember them? Jill Mattson, who's our guest tonight, has learned how to use music to unearth ancient cultures and civilizations so that we can experience them. And I don't mean just through rhythmic tones, but through the actual coding, the actual vibration, the energetic part of that civilization. And she's learned how to activate its very energy with music. And her work brings healing on multiple levels. Her work brings out an interesting aspect of unveiling secrets of ancient cultures. And too often we view the past as archaic and raw in technology and wisdom. However, what if it holds the secrets and the information that we have yet to discover? Certainly, there's always responsibility needed when releasing the secret information of cultures and groups. In what ways might we benefit from connecting with the secrets of the ages, with understanding wisdom that has been encoded in the pyramids or tapping into the wisdom of, say, Atlantis? Could opening such secrets also open our soul or spirit to something greater? And how would you use the wisdom of ancient cultures and civilizations? So a lot to think about there. And our guest tonight focuses on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books known as finding your truth. It is where we learn how to find our message in the world, and sometimes this is about bringing it out on a large scale through speaking and workshops. However, for a lot of people, this is simply what they will help others learn and know. And it applies to this concept because oftentimes, through the energy of cultures, we find a soul-level connection that rings true for us. And being aware of the cultures that resonate for you can also help you focus in on knowing more about yourself. And this helps us to know a framework that we are referencing at different points in our life. This framework may remain consistent throughout our whole life, or it can shift and change with the different phases of our life. And the more we know who we are, the more we understand what we have to share with others. So that's a lot to think about, and yet it's great things. It definitely ties into compassion here and finding your truth. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I'm going to have Jill Mattson with us. She's going to be sharing her work on how music can open us to ancient cultures and how we can use that in healing ourselves. And the song that I have for you during this break is by her, and it's called Cloud Dances. Welcome back. You are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and my name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I am your hostess this evening. You were just listening to Cloud Dances, which is by Jill Mattson, who is our guest tonight, and I'm going to be bringing Jill on in just a moment here. Jill is an author, artist, musician, expert, and composer in sound healing. Her CD, Deep Wave Beauty, was Best New Age CD of 2012 with a Silver Award. She uses ancient and modern techniques with sound energy and healing frequencies. Jill's music includes sound-based beauty treatments, frequencies of flower essences, celestial music with tones from ancient Egypt and celestial bodies, solfeggio, reverse solfeggio, Fibonacci tones, binaural beats and meditative music, countering negative astrological energies, ascended master and angelic channeled energies, ancient languages of light. She draws on extensive research of modern sound healing and with over 20 years of study on ancient civilizations and secret societies. We look tonight at how she's using music to unveil the secrets from ancient cultures and the latest findings of the modern scientific community with healing capabilities of sound, how sound travels through your body. And you can learn more about Jill's work and the things that she offers at her website at www.jillswingsoflight.com. Okay, so some really great information. I'm going to go ahead and open up her mic here. She has a lot to share with us tonight. We're going to intersperse a lot of her music into this show. Hey, Jill, it's wonderful to have you here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Well, let's see here. It looks like the mic's not quite opened up here. Let's try this again. Hopefully it's going to cooperate with me here in a moment. Jill, are you there with me?
Can you hear me? I can hear you.
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay, good.
Your mic.
Good.
Welcome to the show. We really appreciate you giving us your time tonight.
I'm excited to be here, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
I agree. I think this is going to be a wonderful show for our listeners as we delve into both your knowledge and your work here tonight. And you just have a wide variety of things that you do and a huge background here, which is really wonderful. So I'd love to start off by having you share some of your background. You know, who is Jill and how did Jill get into doing this work?
Okay. Well, when I was a little girl, I was always very passionate about music. So I've been a musician since I was a toddler. And later in life, I had almost a conversion kind of experience. I was into fairly traditional Christianity, and I just was rewriting the Bible as an autobiography. I thought that it would yield tremendous insights to look at the Bible from God's point of view. And when I did that, I started with the Old Testament. And as I went through, I had some personal problems. For example, with Adam and Eve, you know, he liked one son's gift and not the other, and I didn't think that was very nice. And then, you know, after one son killed the other, he threw him out into the multitudes, you know, and so I had just gotten a chapter. And I had questions, and so what I did was I said, okay, there's another Bible out there then. I don't have the right one. So I went to the Serpentine version, and I was looking for this information and that information. And then I got into the Torah and Kabbalah and was absolutely fascinated. And from there, I went to, like, you know, Ishaya, it's a mystery school of John the Beloved, to the neighbors, the Babylonians and the Sumerians, and then to the Egyptians. And I just love music. So as I spent all these years studying, primarily spiritual mystic stuff, I just would write down anything about music and sound, and just because that's my passion. So anyway, 25 years later, I have enough to write lots of books, and I've got more coming out. But I think the big thing that I discovered was by reading this information, like, oh, all the way back to the lore about times before there was written history. So in other words, when you look in like Central America, when they're deciphering a lot of their finds in these caves with the Indians and so forth, there's all kinds of writing about Atlantis and even Lemuria prior to that. But when some of these writings refer to these people as being not quite as, I use the word involved in matter, but maybe a little bit more psychic, a little bit more ghost-like, not quite so solid, fleshy as we are. They talk about them hearing clairvoyantly, communicating telepathically. This would be like Lemuria and the very early Atlantis. And so their music then is, it's not necessarily what they hear with their ears, it's what they hear with their clairvoyance. And what they would, you know, the sound range that we pick up in hearing, they were using for very purposeful tools, like making your garden grow or fighting off an enemy or getting well. And I guess in our culture, we think of sound and music as entertainment. And they knew that sound and music changes us because we ingest sound. It comes into our skin. It comes into our body. You can see sound waves, and, well, you can hear them, and then you can look at, like, the frequencies that are registering your body, and you can watch yourself slowly ingest things that you're hearing. So we are what we eat, but we're also what we listen to. And I must say that it happens in slow motion, and it takes a long time, I think, for flexible, tiny, thin, etheric sound waves to become solid. It takes repeats and a lot of energy. But I don't know, this is the way I guess I look at it. If you pour water on the rock, the water just flows right off, and it's like if you think that water is going to change the shape of the rock, you would say that's crazy. But then again, if you look at the Grand Canyon and you see all those mountains carved by the water, it's not crazy. It just needs repeats. And sound is very much like that, and ancient people knew that. So they considered all vibration magic or medicine. And they looked at it for a greater purpose than we do, and probably never really for entertainment. And just having a whole different perspective, I guess, changed my whole world because I decided that I'm going to teach the world that sound is greater than we think, and that if we're really conscious, we can use it for very positive purposes. And we also need to be aware because it can be used very negatively against us. And I think our knowledge about that will help us protect ourselves. So I don't know, Jesse, if I got off track or not. Is that helpful?
I think it's very helpful, and it's a very interesting journey that you took to get to where you are. And I think, too, there's so many sounds that we don't even hear. For example, animals hear things that we don't hear, and I'm sure that plants and nature hears things that animals don't hear, and
right.
So on. And those are the ones that we don't know about. And sometimes I think when our moods are shifting and adjusting and all of a sudden we have an emotion come up, that sometimes that could be related to a sound that we're not hearing audibly, but we're hearing clairvoyantly. So I find it very interesting.
Absolutely.
You brought that buoyant factor in.
And it also comes into your subconscious. It's not just sounds that are out of our hearing range, but it's also sounds in which the volume is just so tiny, our conscious mind doesn't pick up on it. But I'm quite a geek. Anyway, I love reading science. And the work of physicist Robert Becker, in his books, his several books, one is like called Cross Currents. But at any rate, what he's done is he's observed in the body how many different ways sound can travel, like through your ears or your central nervous system. And he likened that to like the internet, digital fast speed, averaging data, really getting it there immediately, lots of it. But then he described the tissues surrounding the nerves, called them the peripheral tissues anyway, the tissues coating the nerves, that they receive very, very slight low volume below a hearing range and tiny little frequencies. And these go like on a cell-to-cell transfer, and that's really quite well established. So, again, it's not in our brain, but it's this in a cell-to-cell transfer of a vibration, it's the complete picture. It's the difference between a live concert and music on your phone. And so this live music, if you will, or the cell-to-cell transfer, this Robert Becker, the scientist, believes is our consciousness because it's activated and triggered before the nervous system. And it seems to be calling the shots, according to this physicist. And the thought being is, so the frequencies that arrive in this little transport system in our body, oh, those little tiny ones, maybe some movements of the stars. As they move in their orbits, they create very low-level frequencies, and we pick up on them. So do birds and animals. That's how they know what north and south is. We pick up on, like, geomagnetic frequencies and frequencies coming from the earth. And our body hears little tiny low-volume frequencies coming out of our ears. They're used in many hospitals. They're called otoacoustic emissions. There's frequencies going through our body with neurotransmitters. There's a whole universe of, like, worlds and worlds of sound. And so our body receives that information. And if it's related to our consciousness, it's those little tiny sounds that have a very powerful influence on the phases, emotions we feel, et cetera, et cetera. And they're very predictable, and they're very manageable, too.
And that's really interesting, because I can only imagine that when we get the cell-to-cell transmission of sound, and this is something that, well, you touched on it at the beginning, it can be used for good things, it can be used for not so good things, depending on the people. And I think this is one of the concerns that's been coming up with thoughts getting reprogrammed actually through some of the cell-to-cell aspects of people trying to do mind control and things like that, which would be a negative aspect of it. On the other hand, this is also kind of helps bring an understanding or shed some light on how some of the quantum energy works, which is very powerful for healing. And you also mentioned a thing that the sound needs to be repetitory, like echoes, which is I worked for an adventure company for a couple of seasons, and when you're in a canyon, the smallest sounds that you might not normally hear, all of a sudden you're getting that echo and you're getting that vibration that's coming back around. And it triggered for me this explains why, for example, when we read up on some things or you look back at music that's based from natural sounds, that they talk about it being echoes as opposed to music.
Well,
which I find...
Yes, and just as kind of a thought off of that, I've got my music kind of categorized. You can categorize it like music for the body, mind, and soul. But for the soul music, what I did was I brought back some of the really cool things I've read about that these ancient cultures did all over the earth, which makes me wonder anyway, you know, how come they're doing the same thing in South America and Africa and China and it. But anyway, all over the earth, they were using, I don't know how to put this, they would convert tones, music, numbers, and even letters. And they looked at the basis of everything. It wasn't music, but it was math. And so with the tool, music, they would like count vibrations, how fast they pulsed, cycles per second, we call it hertz, or they'd count rhythmic pulses. They would look at the mass underneath intervals. They would look at harmonic patterns from different instruments and vowels. And so they had all these different ways of translating music into math. And then they would graph it. So if you look out in nature and you look at what math does Mother Earth use, she's really, in some ways, not very creative. She uses this Fibonacci series of numbers. It's a spiral, like in the galaxy and in a seashell. It's all over the place. It's in the beehive. It's in your body lots of times, lots and lots of times. And so they took what Mother Earth felt was most important, and they created it in tones. They created it in rhythm patterns, length of music, and scales. So, and the idea was that if you listen to these spirals, that, you know, kind of like taking the escalator up to God or heaven or something. And then the other thing was that you would be in tune with Earth. And just, I know it's an ancient idea, but the Earth stopped listening to this about the Renaissance. It was in the middle of the Renaissance. So, and after we stopped listening to these tonal patterns that mimicked Mother Earth, we had the Industrial Revolution and we plundered her. We were disconnected. So anyway, in my Paint Your Soul CD, I have these Fibonacci spirals that are no longer in our music. The other thing I did in that CD is, and I put these in little tones just like Robert Beckard suggested in the background. And then the other thing I did was I found two ancient healing codes dating back from ancient Egypt, and then the Hebrew Bible. I believe Len Horowitz found them, and some of them encoded in numbers in the Old Testament. Then they were used again in the Middle Ages, and it's a healing scale, and it's got wonderful, wonderful blessings. And most people are aware of its six numbers in this little code, and it's translated cycles per second, so it sounds. And there's even a whole healing school on it called Soma Energetics. Anyway, when I did a lot of research into all these codes, there's lots of stuff hidden in texts like the Bible and so forth, I found that the pattern isn't six numbers, it's actually 18. And they're like mirror images, like in duality, or positive and negative. So I put those in. And then in the next CD, the Stardust one, again, I'm just bringing back these ancient techniques, not with some of the real old music, because we'd have to listen to it clairvoyantly. It would go out of our hearing range. And also they used scales that would negate all of our instruments, and it would be very difficult for us to listen to because we haven't grown accustomed to or harmonized with it. So I write my own music. I channel a lot of the music. And then I put these tones in the background. So in the Stardust CD, you can figure out the tones of the planets in an orbit. It's physics. It's not very hard. And the ancient people were doing that. They were listening to the sounds of a planet in an orbit. They figured that out. But anyway, so they were tuning to the stars, and they would play the stars, and then they would they would do musical astrology. They would play tones to balance people, to balance the season, to balance the weather, to change the weather. And the ancient Zoroastrians, the ancient Egyptians, Chinese, Hebrews, all of them, they have a very strong belief in the influence or vibrations or slow magnetic energy coming in from the stars, which is true. You can buy the frequencies below our hearing range that come in a day, $9.99 or something like that off of Motorola. So they do come in, and they do influence us. And they were harmonizing to the sounds of the stars. And the idea was kind of like, water off a duck's back or something. It's like if you're already in tune with the stars and a challenge comes in, it's going to be very easy to handle. So that would be in the Stardust. And then continuing with that theme, I put in frequencies of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen because they're elements in the stars and in us. So that's kind of like my first set of healing music. It's the ancient ways, and it elevates your consciousness. It just kind of opens you right up.
And what I want to do is I want to back a little bit here, back to the Fibonacci, which is the number pattern that works like the Nautilus shell.
Right.
I believe one of the phrases that you use with this is that it quickens the listener's soul on
right.
this. So it allows us to actually rise closer to God. And this is found not only in that Nautilus shell, but we also see it strongly in the human body, art, and architecture,
mm-hmm.
which is very interesting. So I in listening to you, where you were mentioning that this is something that the earth has lost a little bit, is very interesting to me that it's lost some of its own natural sounds in there. And it's one of the things we don't think about. It's that same cycle of the chicken and the egg kind of cycle of which comes first, you know, which is more, where does the destruction start? Where does the healing begin? And with this pattern, you know, was it our technology that made it stop listening, or did it stop listening and that then created us to move more towards technology?
No, it was economy. And see, music in ancient times, it was never entertainment. And whenever we read about ancient stuff, we see it through our eyes today, and we get the wrong impression. So music was always controlled by the governments, always. In ancient China, if you had to get your flute measured so that you didn't have a note that was off a different tone that they wanted their people to listen to and tune to, it was very important. You look at the art and the music, but you can see this same thing in the Egyptian art. That great civilization is 3,000 years old. Art never changes. I mean, mm-hmm. wouldn't you think somebody be a little creative? No, because they'd be thrown off to jail. They were prescribed what they could create. And so, so the scales that were prescribed by the ancient leaders were always scales that mocked this Fibonacci pattern. But in the Renaissance, first time ever, you have some churches hiring musicians, and musicians can have a little concert and people pay to see it. So they're starting to be able to call the shots first time. And then what you have is, you know, you have an opera singer and, you know, the keys, you know, the song's written in C, but she needs to sing a little lower. So they have to transpose it. But the way the math works with this Fibonacci spiral as a scale basis is it's very messy. And you would need a piano for the key of C. You're going to need a separate piano for the key of D. You're going to need a separate piano for the key of G. Same thing with your flute. You'd have to have one flute for each scale. Or basically, other than a few instruments, it would just be very costly. Even when you look at some pictures of really old early Renaissance pianos, the black keys have, they look like wedding cakes, have these little tiers. And so, like, you have an F, you have F sharp 1, F sharp 2, F sharp 3, F sharp 4. And when we adopted the equal temperament scale, made it very easy for musicians to go from key to key, and it made it cheap, much cheaper, to have instruments that can go from key to key. But all the special sacred geometry was lost underneath the music.
Oh, wow. I'm going to give people a little sampling of this Fibonacci style that we've been talking about. And this particular one is called Faded Roses. So we're going to give them a chance to listen to what that style is like. Tonight, as we've got a musical guest, Jill Mattson, on, for those of you that are just joining us, that song was Faded Roses, which is demonstrating the Fibonacci numbers, which is a number pattern in music that helps us tune into the earth, and it also focuses on quickening the listener's soul so that it allows us to rise closer to God. Some very interesting work, and if you're just tuning in, you will want to go back and listen in the archives to what we've already discussed in the show, because Jill's got a lot of information here. And so it's a very interesting pattern where you have that musical vocal in that particular mm-hmm. song.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I did with the frequencies is I had tuning forks made. And they're very soft and subtle in the background because I'm trying to hit the softer pickup in the human body for maximum. And then I channel my songs. I feel very inspired. You know, sometimes I just hear them and I write them down. Or I channel, so sometimes somebody comes in me and helps me. Sometimes I think I'm doing it, you know, just humming a little song. And then afterwards, I'll notice that there's all kinds of patterns in there, and I wasn't being a genius or anything. I was just humming a song. So I feel they're gifts to me in, I don't know, inspired cosmic plagiarism or something. But I think we have a great cross-segment into compassion, which is near and dear to your heart, in two ways.
Yes.
I want to talk about my flower symphonies, but before I even get into them, I want to go back to the 18th century in England with Theosophy, with Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey. And in Theosophy, they had these wonderful writings, Ascended Master teachings, and they talked about overlighting the classical composers. Most of the classical composers were in these secret societies learning this type of information. Claude Debussy, for example, was the Grand Master. You know, like in Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, they, you know, the big poobah. And Beethoven's teacher had that exalted position. So Mozart wrote about secret societies in the Magic Flute. So Claude Debussy's is related to these mystic societies. And the Ascended Master's teachings talk about overlighting them, meaning helping them write their music, and that each, they talked about the gifts. They talked about, in general, that the classical music, I guess I'll start an early Renaissance for this story. In coming out of the Dark Ages, the Catholic Church forbid, go to jail time, playing the Fibonacci or the interval of five, which is created by two Fibonacci numbers in a row, was forbidden. And in fact, in the Dark Ages, they even wrote that you shouldn't teach your daughters instruments. If you're a musician, you couldn't go in the consecrated soil to be buried. Music was almost like the tool of the devil. And anyway, so in this absence, in this void of many of these sounds the earth had heard for years, in Germany comes Martin Luther, who breaks the back of the Catholic Church, and then the musicians are let free. They're not punished for being creative. And so in Germany, you find like Bach coming out. He does a ton of these earth sounds. But unfortunately, when we translate them, we're translating them into our scale, which eliminates these little fine things. But anyway, each composer, according to these Ascended Master teachings, was bringing a gift. For example, Mendelssohn brought, one of the things was compassion. Bach opened up mental thinking and mental capacities and mathematical abilities. They write that Claude Debussy was singing the songs of the gnomes and the fairies, and they talk about Chopin and how that prior to him, there wasn't any societies for poets or arts. But I just wanted to talk about Beethoven. He just rocks my soul. And, you know, like when I see Moonlight Sonata, just to die for, maybe even literally. It just has such passion. And they write in these teachings that they watched the music of the Renaissance draw people out of the Dark Ages and all the awful things that went with the Dark Ages. And they talk about how the music came in frilly and trilly, like, you know, Bach and Mendelssohn first, and how this influenced then the ornate architecture and dress of the Victorian era. And then they were kind of like critiquing themselves, saying, it looks pretty, but some of these people are pretty cold. And it's all for show. And so they talk about overlighting Beethoven to develop compassion. And one of the things that they say is, go look in your history books, and you won't find a charity prior to Beethoven. Because his songs, his whole, the whole package develops that compassion. I just thought, that little story.
That's really interesting. And two, before we move on to the healing flowers things, I also want to jump back a little bit because you were talking about the heavenly spheres and the celestial elements that are there. I have a question that came in through my chat, and I'm I don't really have the information on this because I'm not up on this particular thing, and they were asking about what about the modes, and they said like Phygian and Mixolydian.
Okay.
I don't know
sure,
if I'm pronouncing those correct.
Yes, I know exactly what they're talking about. The Catholic Church burned. So the look at the Catholic Church as a business. Their competitors, about 400 A.D., would be Egypt. It would be the Zoroastrians in Sumerian Babylonia. It would be the Druids. And they were all into these nature sounds, sacred geometry. It's earth-wide. So they said, okay, these people rise close to God and develop psychic gifts and all these other intuitive things through music. They say music is a tool of the devil. They're just delineating themselves. And they outlaw things and they burn all the information on what the Greeks were doing in their music. When they copied these scales, Mixolydian, Ionian, they didn't have the rules because they burnt them all. And they are not the Greek scales. They're just not. They're whatever the Catholic Church made up. And in fact, they're carefully going out of their way to modify things, making sure there's none of these nature path sounds, frequency patterns. So when you go back to the Greek stuff, not through Europe, but through, let's say, Turkey or some of the Middle East, you find a whole different description of what the Greek music was all about. And this is so cool. They talk about people involving, becoming more individualized, more separate from God, less intuitive, more responsible for themselves, less according to a tribe. And that in the Greek epic, they were personalities were becoming more divergent, and their music they created scales to modify the emotional challenges of different tribes. Ionians is a place. Mixolydian is a place. Dorian, they're places. Dorian is a little island where very upright people from Egypt came. So if you look at the intent of the original Greek scales, then you're looking at, like, how today we'd say, like, if we had a scale for New Yorkers or one for the South, which would be very different than the Midwest or California. And if we were to stereotype them and come up with their, you know, the Southern people maybe need sped up and, you know, whatever stereotype you want, they were creating different scales, arranging these some of the intervals in the Fibonacci sequences to help different personalities balance their negative challenges, kind of going back to your opening reading. They're doing it with these actual scales. I just think that's so cool.
It's really cool. And the same person that was asking that question made a comment as well in chat while you were talking. The augment fourth was considered the devil interval in Locarian.
Yes. And that's so, because when you take those two numbers and combine them as an interval, because two notes close to each other combined, you create phi. Phi, it's an irrational number. And I believe that phi, like if you think of two seeds, you plant them in the ground, let's say the male and female have like frequencies because they vibrate, everything vibrates. So you have these little two towns. So they're growing up and the ways they're going to interact, they can't not. That's science. And they interact and the math, like if you have a 5 and a 20 or a 5 and a 10, you're going to get 7.5 as your combined wave. But every now and then you're going to come up and you're going to have an irrational number. It's always phi. And when you do that, it's like Mother Nature doesn't round off numbers. So it's like the math goes off to the right. And the first phi in a sequence starting with 1 is a little bit under phi. So the branch goes off to the right. Then you get back to easy math. The next five a little over. He goes up and the branches off to the left. So these ancient people, again, as I said before, they're copying Mother Earth. And he's right, that augmented force, that spy. Well, not quite. It's a little off from the equal temperament, but close enough. That was a good point.
Yeah, and this is great. And these are
yeah, go ahead.
Pieces of information. I'm going to jump in here because I want to give people a sampling of the aspects from the Stardust CD, which we were talking about, the celestial elements and the astrological
always.
Challenges. And,
yeah, always your
and
initial
all of
thought
that.
Was also, yeah, was from the Stardust.
Always was from that, uh-huh. And I'm going to jump in here, and I think I've got two choices here that I can do. I'm going to go with Time to Go, or It's Time to Go, from that CD.
Okay.
So let's listen to that and give them a choice of... And that was titled, It's Time to Go. This is from the Stardust CD. So that's bringing in the celestial elements in there. And again, if you can just give us a little reminder, Jill, what the celestial elements, it's alleviating the astrological challenges, and it's the subtle energy from
the
stars.
Yes, the frequencies of the stars in our solar system so that you can harmonize with them. And it's the ancient pattern of neutralizing astrological energies. And I also put in, there's so many ways to look at our energy. One way is by elements, and we're primarily carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, which is also what the stars are made out of. So I put in the frequencies of those elements.
And that is, I think that's just so fascinating to me, to be able to connect on that level. I mean, we're as an average person used to connecting with somebody through conversation or looking at them or something like that, but to really connect on this big universal level is almost mind-blowing in a way. It really is.
Yes, yes it is. And many of the star systems, echoing off one of your earlier comments, many of the star systems like the Pleiades or I don't know, different groups where people channel beings of this star system or that. They
a lot
have
of the different...
reciprocal relationships. They have very special math with their frequencies and our frequencies. It's almost like we're in train together in harmony or something. So it's almost, you can almost come up with a frequency reason why certain beings are helping us at this time.
And I'm going to give them one more sample from this, and then after this I'd like to move on to your Deep Wave Beauty CD. So
we need to do the flowers as well.
And we will get to the flowers as well. So this one real quick, we've got a one-minute clip here from the Stardust CD as well called David's Song. And then we'll move on from there. And I just thought that was great because it's different from the It's Time to Go one. Now, your Deep Wave Beauty CD is the one that you won a 2012 Silver Award for, Best New Age Album
right.
of the Year. So that's got to be exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
and I can imagine. And this one, you use sound music as a way to help people look and feel younger and more beautiful. And if I'm correct,
yeah.
it holds the frequency equivalents of essential vitamins and nutrients, which is critical to, like, healthy skin, collagen, muscles, skin tissues, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think I read on this was that it's like having the skin tissues of the face are lifted and firmed.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather do that than some of the other treatments out there any day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, you absorb sound. So if you think of it, let me see, I also have the frequencies of the muscles in your face and neck. And if you think about a violin, and it's got a short, teeny-weeny little string, and it's high-pitched, and a cello has a long string, and it's deep-pitched. So as we age, our muscles sag a little. They get longer, so they get flat, they get deeper in pitch. And with entrainment, you know, if you go into like a clock shop and you hear a grandfather clock going tick, 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 and the little one going tick, 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 over time, the little one is going to match the rhythm of the bigger one. So it's almost like you can transfer energy through resonance on certain tones. So I've got the frequencies of youthful, healthy muscles in your face and neck. And then I put in associations of vibrations with vitamins and collagen. And again, it's the kind of thing one listen isn't, it's like water on a rock. But I've had people write me and send me pictures where they listen to it. They just put it in the background, listen to it like 24/7. They sleep with it. And it's making a very noticeable difference in about 6 weeks.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's just kind of like, think of going to the and getting a facial. And then also the feeling of beauty. It's like you cannot be physically beautiful, but do something beautiful. And people all of a sudden perceive you in a better physical light. So the feeling of beauty is an octave of perfect sacred geometry that can be seen in your face. That we're kind of hardwired to say, oh, that makes something beautiful. And so the idea is to feel beautiful and those feelings very much influence how people perceive our physicality.
And also with this music, if I'm understanding correctly, also allows stress to melt away, bringing in peace and calmness, which of course is also going to help us develop that healthier nutrients and things in our system. Let's give them a little sample here with On Angel's Wings, and then I've got another question in chat for you after we listen to this.
Sure.
And I should mention also, too, that Cloud Dances, the song that we heard on break just before Jill came on, is also from this Deep Wave Beauty CD in there. The question that I had coming in, Jill, from chat is, how do the 12-tone row fit in, and what role does it really have? This was created by Schoenberg.
The 12-tone row, I'm not sure I'm familiar with the 12-tone row. I do know what the Ascended Masters had to say in general about Schoenberg work. And what they said was that the music for each culture is something that is planned for their evolution, for their betterment, lessons to learn. And that coming about the time of Schoenberg, that they were, again, these are Ascended Master teachings, okay, they were saying that they were observing that there was a great number of people who had very hard emotional bodies. So it was so hard, it's like they had to shatter before they could even consider getting into their hearts. And they talked about a person who's very closed heart energy and has got a very brittle, judgmental kind of emotional field, that you could play a delicate little melody by Chopin, and it's like it's going to slip through the cracks, and it ain't going to get him. It's like there's no resonance. He has no delicacy for that music to resonate with and develop. So they talked about the techniques in particular of Schoenberg to shatter people's dissonance so that they could begin to get in and start to develop love.
Oh, wow. Okay. Kind of like having to break down before you could break through.
Yes, yes. That's what they wrote about that.
Okay. That's really an interesting aspect. It's so fascinating how these different music patterns can really shift us in these different ways tremendously. In here, just opening from, you know, thinking back of how these patterns come in from all these different cultures and tonations, and you've made some great correlations even in this show as far as when certain music came out and what happened in culture and society as a result of that music coming out. As you mentioned, I believe earlier, for example, Beethoven, and there weren't charitable organizations prior to these musicians bringing their music out and resonating these different aspects. And even if we look at, as you said, certain music patterns created organization or rulership type societies in there, and it's interesting for me to think about that and apply that today and some of the things that are happening. And you also mentioned this aspect of Renaissance music that brought us out of the Dark Ages, because I was having a conversation earlier with somebody online actually about that shift from the Golden Age to the Dark Age and how it waves in our planetary movement, and how we're kind of shifting in that dark right now just before we get ready to shift back towards the light. So it's all very interesting the way it cycles around and comes back through, and we can see this even
theory. And again, it's just a theory. I have absolutely no idea if it's true, but my theory is that, in again, looking at antiquity, most of the mystic groups, they always parallel time as like a spiral energy, and that it's very much parallel to music, i.e. the Fibonacci series of numbers converted to sound. So they always see time, like Einstein does, as somewhat pliable, though maybe just a little bit. And since they relate music to time, and many formulas for physics also talk about sound and cycles per second, so they're introducing the element of time right in the mathematics of sound. And so, I don't know, I'm just thinking that the harmonic series, everything that's a sound has an echo. It just, it's think of a clock, if you, a pendulum, if you pull it way out, it's going to go back and forth and back and forth. It just doesn't do one swing. And sounds like that, and it's, you have an initial sound, and then it has like little tiny ripples after it. Think about being on a bridge and dropping a rock of water in a pond. There's a big hole where the rock goes in, and then there's all the little ripples. Well, the distance between those ripples is math. It's just like the harmonic cycle. So your first echo is an octave. The second one is a fifth. And you follow this set of mathematics. And as you get towards the end of this harmonic series, which is 16 notes, it becomes increasingly dissonant. More and more dissonant, more and more dissonant, just like the Schoenberg music, kind of think about like a hand grabbing all the negativity and just ripping it out of the earth and people and society. And that's kind of like, I parallel some of the difficulties in the time we're going now to the end of the harmonic series, and I wonder if the ancient people were right. If they were right, then we would be experiencing great dissonance, and that would cause release of a lot of stored negative energies, would cause dramatic weather patterns, and it would cause a lot of dirty secrets in governments to be revealed. Anyway, my thought. Idea.
It is. It's fascinating. I mean, to think that those tonations can have such a major influence on everything that's happening, and can create these releases and create these weather shifts, and it's really fascinating to think about. It really is. I have to say that. I want to make sure that we're getting here also to the Healing Flower Symphonies, because you have two volumes of those, Volume 1 and Volume 2. This brings out a vibrational version of flower remedies, such as the Bach flower remedies, to bestow deep emotional healing. So please share with us more about that.
Sure. After I had finished the two CDs, Stardust and Paint Your Soul, I was praying to, I was looking for information on how could I heal our society today, the most powerful. And I don't know, I'm kind of a incurable Pollyanna, save the world type. might be annoying to some, but, you know, hey, spades, that's what I am. And so I was making this prayer, and the answer I received was to work on the emotions. And as a coincidence, at the time I met this girl who was really into the Bach flower remedies. And so I tried them, being amazed how well they work. And the idea is that that Mother Earth has many ways of loving us and healing us. And each flower that she gives us, that she produces, has a feeling, but it's a different feeling. Like a rose is beautiful, yet a daisy might be cheerful. And when you look at some indigenous tribes, they would do things like if you were depressed, they would like, you know, consume daisy energy or be around daisies. And they would use these soft and subtle, psychic, if you will, little tiny vibrations coming from flowers as a mechanism to heal their body, mind, soul. They would feel that if they cured their emotional problem, if they cured their depression and stopped worrying, they're not going to have an ulcer kind of a thought. And so anyway, this Edmund Bach, a doctor in England in the early 1900s, he developed this repertoire of flower remedies. And in reading his stuff, he said that the soul flowers would represent like a cure for humanity's emotional healing. And there was good news and bad news with that. The good news was that was the flowers that I was going to use in my CDs. The second was, the bad part was that I wanted to pick my favorite flowers, and I I ended up not doing that. I ended up deferring to him and using the soul flowers because he was saying that that's a matrix to lift the emotional body. So what I did was I got the frequency of the flowers, and this, which is the same as the frequency of the vial. So when you buy them, when you buy a flower remedy, you drink them. So anyway, again, listening to the frequency is akin to ingesting it. So each, there's 12 soul flowers, and each one is embedded with the frequency of the positive emotion. But another thing that we haven't talked about that was a big thing in antiquity was that they assigned positive and negative, almost like magnetic or charged energies to any pitch. So they would say like an emotion, which would be one pitch, impatience would be, you'd have a positive end and a negative end. Positive end, you're patient. Negative, you're impatient. And so then what I was then thinking to the Greeks, who did a lot on catharsis, again, kind of healing from the emotional point of view. If you can cure your emotions, then some of your physical ailments won't happen or will go away. So when I looked at their catharsis, they were acknowledging and accepting, giving their pain its due. In other words, rather than saying if you run away from something and never face it, it stays with you in your energy body. You have to kind of look your pain in the face, and only then can it release from your emotional body. So what I did was pick like fear to trust. So that would be one flower remedy. It takes the energy of fear and helps you to vibrate it into trust. So I would sync it with the frequency of the flower that they associated with it. And then, I'm just very musical and creative. So in that particular one, I think for trust, I thought, like, that was like a knowing underneath your feeling. It's just so deep. And I built the trust portion of the music on a heartbeat. I mean, literally, there's a sound, bum, 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 of a fake heartbeat. And it's a big part of the back part of the symphony, thinking that, you know, you trust your heart, it's always going, da-da-da-da-da. And then I did for catharsis, I would do, like, the fear portion. And, again, these musical things, gifts that I have, they're just through me because they're given to me. So I just did that. But afterwards, when I started working with them, I learned quite a bit about catharsis. I learned that, well, first of all, I learned two ways. One is I worked in a nursing home, and I played my violin, and I had a captive audience because they would come in before lunch, and they were in wheelchairs, so they, no one could go away. Anyway, I would play all this, and they wanted sad stuff from their youth. And they were like, this was high-functioning, and no one spoke to each other, not a word. No one spoke to me in, like, almost 9 months. And so they were, like, frozen. And we played all this sad stuff all the time. And then towards the end, they started talking to me, and I said, oh, great, I'm warming up. But by the time I ended up leaving that, they were talking freely to one another. It wasn't frozen at all. And I think I observed when you feel your sad emotions, you have to give them their due. It's almost like, imagine like a thin ghosty hand going into your being, and you have all this crusted pain and sorrow and all these awful things you've felt, and you have to kind of like think of a finger just kind of digging and scratching and then pulling it out. Because what I observed was is you can, as the Greeks thought, you can build a positive emotion simply by feeling it and making it a habit. So if you constantly listen to heroic music, you get a little braver each listen. So you can build a virtue based on, you know, like a very patient-sounding music is going to make you more patient. And it happens drop by drop. But catharsis is different. Because when you listen to these flower symphonies, it's like you listen to the cathartic part, the first part of the flower music, and, you know, it sounds beautiful, sounds fine. But then sometimes you listen to it, it's almost like you burp or something. It's like the negative energy builds, and then it passes out of your system, and you feel it on the way going out. So you know it works. But I always like to caution people that my flower symphonies are not for pansies, because for just a second you will release your pain and you feel it. You can't not. There's no other way to get it. If it leaves you, it leaves through your emotional body. And if you're not psychic, like I'm very psychic, so I could even tell you where it goes out of my body. But if I'm not paying attention, I'll just dislike the music for a second, because I think it's a human nature. We want to blame things. We assign our own negativity to other people. So if you're listening to the cathartic release and just for a second you feel, that's really good. You're letting go of some garbage that causes problems. And so I was just so excited to talk about these, given your theme of compassion.
Well, let's look at one of these. Water violet, what is that going to do for us? Because I'm going to play that.
Water violet, yes, is one of the most, I thought, unique flowers in the soul flower group. It is for a fairly advanced soul who is a loner, and I'm just using my imagination. Okay, think of a Tibetan highly evolved monk, and he lives all by himself on a mountain. And he goes and he doesn't mingle with anybody but sits and meditates and prays. It's for a person that has good things to begin with but does not interact with other people. And in the evolution of that soul, the idea is that you begin to form meaningful friendships, maybe not, you know, a ton of shallow acquaintances, but you start to build some meaningful relationships, and that by doing this, this soul now begins to take his very high energy and bless more.
Well,
and so the song starts, yeah.
Let's listen to this clip in here, and I think what you're saying is really appropriate for a lot of people, and I think we have a lot of old souls out there that have been kind of reclusive, and now they're having to come back out by choice or otherwise to bring their... So I think this is a very appropriate thing, as well as those people who have been hurt along the way and closed themselves off and now need to open back up to people again. So this is Water Violet, and this is coming off of Volume 1 of Healing Flower Symphonies. So that was water violet. And is there a variation, Jill, between volume 1 and 2? Or is it just based on the same principles? Or
Well, between the two of them, they're a set. They're the soul flowers. There's 6 on each. And so together they cleanse the, according to Bach, Edmund Bach, that is, they cleanse the emotional body. So there have different emotions on them, like maybe fear, trust might be on one, and, different emotional gifts would be on the other. So if you're on my website at jillswingsoflight.com, you can look at the tracks, and it'll tell you which songs and what particular emotion it clears.
Okay, perfect. And I was going to also play a sample from your volume 2 in this, which is Memulus. And what would that do?
That one is releasing fear and going to trust. That's
okay.
The one that I think I mentioned earlier. Was it that one? I think that's the one that has the heartbeat on it. It's subtle,
okay.
But it's there. Yeah.
Well, and I'm going to put that on and give us a chance to listen to that as well, so that people get a chance to that. And this is called Memulus, and it is taking us from fear into trust. That was coming from Volume 2 of the Healing Flower Symphonies in there with Jill. I think some really interesting aspects here, because I can feel that shift happening from where it starts to as it progresses through in your work, which is what she's talking about. You can feel this transition going from one state of being to another state of being in there, which is very exciting. And I know that we barely have touched on some of your stuff in some ways, Jill, as much as we've covered. You know, there's so many other things you do. You have some beautiful art, which I know is also listed on your website. You also sent me a clip for a meditation, which mm-hmm. was titled Cosmic Stream, which was a short mm-hmm. meditation for the root chakra. Now, is this part of a series where you've got a meditation for all the chakras, or?
Yes. Since I spent all these years studying all these secret societies, every single one had a way for clearing your chakras with sound, and none of them are the same. So I just collected them and compiled them. I think I have like 17 different ways to clear your chakras. So it's a CD, and there's 2 meditations on it. And so, like, different groups will give pitches, syllables, rhythms, harmonics for chakras. And then, in addition, I was just kind of creative. Like, you know, a certain chakra might be associated with an organ. Well, when healthy, an organ has a certain pitch, a collective frequency. So like I'll sync it with that. Or if I'm playing a crystal, well, that has a frequency. So, you know, different crystals are associated with different organs or colors. You know, the colors are associated with the chakras. But they're frequencies. You can play them in the range of sound. So while you're meditating on, let's say, the color red, I'm playing red. And so I have all these little sounds in the back to amplify the power of the chakra healing, because that's a very powerful emotional tool. Think of each chakra as like an emotional gift, and you can shift into that energy and obtain and demonstrate mastery over those gifts. And so I think chakra tuning is important.
I think it's very, very important. And it's one of the easier things for us to do and one of the things we don't think about so easily. And I'm glad you sent me this one for the root chakra, which I'm going to play, because the root chakra really helps us ground. And a lot of people are afraid of delving into the root chakra energy because it's got a more primal energy to it, and it really opens up a lot of passion and a lot of energy in our body, but especially as we're ascending and we're doing a lot of thinking and a lot of learning and developing and growing, we need to get into that root chakra to help ground and balance some of that out. So I'm going to go ahead and play this one. This is the Cosmic Stream Meditation.
We shall now clear the chakras. The root chakra. Imagine a red flashlight shining up to hit the base of your tailbone, where your root chakra is located. Pure, translucent red light will come into your root chakra like a jewel, bringing deep, rich energy from the earth. Breathe in red. See red fill your body. And as you exhale, see it transform into beautiful green energy. Exhale green out your mouth. Breathe in red. Breathe out green. Breathe in red. Breathe out green. Breathe in red. Breathe out green. We're going to clear our root chakra with energy contained within our own.
So that was a piece of that. And I wanted to play that too, because so many people today are struggling with different earthly things, finances and other things. And oftentimes when we are having financial issues, it is the root chakra that's off and out of balance and closed up. So that's
just
a little
a thought, if I could add. Again, I see everything in terms of sound, or an octave of sound, which an octave is bum, bum. It's the same note. It's just, if you count the cycles per second, it's either half or doubled. Same note, higher or lower. But anyway, color. If you take the colored lights, you can take them down many octaves, and they'll create like one octave of sound. And so like C represents red, D would represent red, orange, and so forth. And you can superimpose like a color wheel on a musical octave, because with the scientific phenomenon of resonance, energy transfers between octaves. So anyway, if you think of ascension, like you're talking about, ascension, when I think of ascension, I think of white light or clear light. And in order to achieve that, we have to have mastered all of these other frequencies, colors, vibrations, feelings, thoughts, all those words I'm using, I'm saying the exact same thing. So in order to ascend, you have to master the root chakra, the sacral chakra, and you have to master them all.
And most people try to... instead of mastering it. So root chakra, people, that's an important one. Jill, our time is just wrapping up here. It's hard to believe it's been 2 hours, and I know we didn't get all the music in that I had loaded into the system to play for people, but I do encourage them to go to your website, which is jillswingsoflight.com. And I also know you have another website, I believe, if people sign up for your mailing list and they can get a couple of samples.
Right. If you, I have another website called musicforbeauty.com that talks about deep wave beauty. But if you go to jillswingsoflight.com and go to the bottom of the home page, there's 3 free sound healing MP3s, I don't know, about 30 minutes of music. And when you sign up, put your email in and download the MP3s, then I also send a newsletter, kind of like stuff we're talking on tonight, if that interests you. The newsletter comes out once every 2 weeks. So, free sound healing at jillswingsoflight.com, bottom of the homepage.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight, sharing your music, and I encourage people to go see your art as well, because I'm sure that that's aligned with the rest of what you're doing, and you have some really wonderful pieces on your website as well for that. And we've been talking tonight with Jill Mattson. She's been sharing with us her work in sound healing and how she has created and developed vibrational energy from the universe, ancient cultures, and flower remedies. And again, if you'd like to purchase her CDs or artwork or learn more about her work, you can go to jillswingsoflight.com, and that's going to be a great resource for you. So I want to encourage you to check that out, go there, and look more into her work. If you've missed any part of the show, please go back and listen to it in the archives, because there has been an incredible wealth of information, a lot of deep thoughts in here tonight, lots of great responses in the chat room I saw as well, appreciating everything that Jill shared with us tonight. Next week on our show, I've got Sarah Troy coming in, working with Your True Colors, which is a program she developed, and we'll be looking at how her True Colors method identifies personality, where and how you need to balance yourself, and who to surround yourself with. So that's going to be a very interesting show as well. My next set of books, which are based on relationships, are going to be available soon. I'm just getting the finishing touches on those, so I will definitely keep you posted on them. And I do have events being listed at jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com, so you can stay on top of what's available. I have 2 that are getting ready to close for registration here in the next week, so you definitely want to take advantage of those. And if you want to take advantage of my books, Activating Compassion, tonight's the last night. I'm just getting ready to close out that special right now. But I do have a brand new special which is starting basically in a few minutes, as soon as I can get it posted up. And my June special, because every month I pick a new special, my June special is going to be short coaching sessions and readings. So if you have any little issues that you want to work through, something you want to get some quick advice on, I can certainly work with you on that. I'm doing 20-minute sessions for $30, 10-minute sessions for $15, and all you need to do for those is to email me at jessie@jessieannnicholsgeorge1, that's the number 1.com, to take advantage of that. So if you just email me there, and let me know what you're looking for, whether you want to do a 20-minute or a 10-minute session, I'll get that scheduled with you, and you can take advantage of that special. Don't forget that we've got several shows right here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights we have Darren Bouquer, who is a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans. He does spiritual insights. Actually, I think he's been shifting the name of that a little bit, but he delves into very interesting off-the-wall topics, and then also does readings with that. Monday nights we have Kevin Baird walking on the sidewalk with his Horizon Oracle Journeys deck, a deck that he created. You can find out, I was trying to think, he's got a website as well, and I'm drawing a blank on it on the moment, so I apologize to Kevin that I'm drawing a blank on that at the moment, but He does some incredible work as well, and it's a totally different deck that he created and is very pictorial, very visual, and I encourage you to tune in to his shows. Inner Wisdom with Mary Phelan is on Tuesday nights here, and she also provides wisdoms and insights and channels energy and does readings with that. So also another good person. We have so many great people that are collaborating here on Main Street Universe. And then Wednesday nights, we have Daniel and Janice, and Brett is also back doing hosting on that show as well. And they are on our flagship show, which is called Main Street Universe on Wednesday nights. And they usually have either guests on or they're delving into some really interesting topics. I know they've got some great guests coming up in the upcoming weeks here, so that's another option for tuning in. And it's been an amazing night. And again, I just can't stress enough that if you've got some friends and family, if they like music, share the show with them, because this is very, very interesting stuff of going through and discovering these different ancient cultures, being able to tune into our solar system and the universe and the stars and break through astrological patterns and tap into the healing flower remedies through music and share this with them. They just come right back in to the same link you used to get here, as well as they can find all of the archive shows, not only for Activating Compassion and the Midnight Hour, but all of the shows on Main Street Universe are on my website at JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1, that's number1.com. And I just want to say thank you so much for being here tonight. I look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into Activating Compassion and share the show with others. I'm going to leave you tonight with one last song by our guest, Jill Mattson. And this song is titled My Soul. And we mentioned, I think, earlier which CD that came from. And I'm sorry, I moved the notes on myself, so I don't have the exact one. I want to say that was on, and I'm going to find it here for a minute so you know which one it is. It is the Paint Your Soul CD. So that is the one that this closing song is on. And like I said, you can find everything from our earlier parts on my website there. Thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week.
Thank you.